sitting at the table.
Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Freedom.
Respect.
Justice.
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 Just this.
Just this.
Equality.
Equality.
Remedy.
Protection.
Fairness.
Fair trial.
Citizens.
Right.
Well.
Peace.
Losers.
Lose.
Men.
This is my mistake, and let me make it good. I raised the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum.
Identity.
Family.
Home.
Conscience.
Expression.
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 Participation.
Democracy.
Welfare.
Work.
Work.
Leisure.
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 Health.
Education.
Progress.
Culture.
Human rights.
Dr. Dana.
Solid.
Fill in the mortar. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM and over the internet at cjtr.ca. We can also be heard on SaskTel Max at channel 806 and Access Communications Digital Service at channel 700. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. My name is Jim Hutchings. With me today is my co-host Atenda Chikukwa and our special guest, Tracy Sandin, Chair of Food Assessment for Regina Capel Health Region. I believe I got that right?
Yes.
Close? Welcome, everyone.
Hi, hi.
So we're going to be talking about food today,
mm-hmm.
or the lack thereof.
Yes.
Right.
So, Tracy, can you tell us your role in the Regina Food Assessment Project? Mm-hmm. I'm one of many partners that are sitting around the table working towards improving community food security for Regina. So the primary objective of the community food assessment is to build a strong strategic relationship between key organizations, businesses, people, individuals who are working towards community food security within Regina.
Mm-hmm.
We know that there's a lot of people doing some really good work,
mm-hmm.
Trying to address the complex social issues
mm-hmm.
For people in Regina. But despite the number of local initiatives working to improve security, there's still no strategic network or comprehensive vision or action plan for how to affect change across the many sectors. And the community food assessment is working at addressing these gaps.
So what does food security mean?
Mm-hmm. When we look at food security, there's two ways to consider it. What this project looks at is something called community food security.
Okay.
So that exists when all community residents obtain a safe, culturally acceptable, nutritionally adequate diet through a sustainable food system that maximizes community self-reliance and social justice.
Mm-hmm.
So we look at a more of a holistic view. There's something
mm-hmm.
also considered as household food insecurity, and that looks at, do people have the money? And it's really
mm-hmm.
a poverty issue. And we look at it a little bit more broadly. When we're looking at a food system, we're looking at all the steps
mm-hmm.
that are involved with getting food right from a seed to what we do with the food after. So we're looking at processing, distribution, consumption,
mm-hmm.
access, and food waste.
Mm-hmm.
So how does something like the food bank figure into that?
Mm-hmm. The food bank is definitely an emergency food resource. And one of the things they help to do is when people are in the time of need and don't have access to them, help fill that need.
So that's, I guess, you know, when you look at the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, mm-hmm. the right to food is expressly mentioned in the Declaration of Human mm-hmm. Rights. So I guess so we've got the food bank.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering about the responsibility of the community. How is this right basically looked after by government, by the community? Mm-hmm. Is it something that's really taken seriously?
I don't think we can say it's not taken seriously. Mm-hmm. We live in a really generous community. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when the food bank needs help or they're running short of food, there's always people willing to donate food. We tend to lead the country and we always win the food bank challenges for donations of food. And when we did public consultations with the community food assessment, the public, in particular those who use the food bank and other emergency food sources, recognize that we have a generous community in Regina and that people shouldn't go hungry in Regina because mm-hmm. there are places to access it.
So the food bank would be considered a strength in our community. What would be a weakness?
Yeah, I think the food bank is considered a strength because of the service and the need it fills, but it's also considered not necessarily a weakness, but also considered as it's unfortunate that we have to rely so much on the food bank and that people cannot find access to food in their own ways.
Mm-hmm.
So that is, you know, it's on both sides of the fence and people recognize it on both sides.
Do you think the problem with food insecurity is that people are not getting paid enough, or do you think that the price of food has really gone up?
There's a bit of a combination of that for sure. Canada has one of the cheapest food supplies in the world. But there are varying prices of food, even across the city, that we've seen and we've heard. And unfortunately, many of the people who are on lower incomes, who need the cheapest food, live in neighborhoods that don't have access to food. So they have to factor in transportation costs, which always increase the price of food. But that being said, we definitely have a challenge where we do have a lot of people who don't have access to enough money for food. The reality is by the time you pay for housing, shelter, and some of the other power, electricity, which is essential living in Saskatchewan, the food budget is kind of the negotiable price. When we look at people within Canada, 61% of people who are considered food insecure are actually people who are employed. So I think mm-hmm. we often assume that it's people who are on social assistance, but we have well over half of people who are working for minimum wage or less mm-hmm. That aren't making mm-hmm. aren't making enough to afford food.
Mm-hmm. I know in America they have food stamps so that they can subsidize their diet. Mm-hmm. Do we have anything other than government assistance?
Yeah, food stamps would be considered, you know, a government assistance.
Yeah.
And there are some different variable programs within Saskatchewan and Canada. When we look at the social assistance program, they do have a kind of an allotment for food within that bulk amount. But with the rising costs of housing, it always gets taken into kind of that amount. Mm-hmm. So there are some food considerations definitely within the assistance programs we provide. There's also something called the Canada Prenatal Nutrition Program. So that's for high-risk pregnant women.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a milk voucher or a food voucher that often goes along with that to help.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering, how long has this concern about food been sort of formalized? As far as government is concerned,
I'm not sure I have an answer for that
mm-hmm.
one.
Mm-hmm. I was just wondering because obviously adequate food for families is going to be a concern that's been there for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
We've always had people who, mm-hmm. for whatever reason, weren't able to provide enough money to
for necessities of life and that sort of thing. And I think it's only in the recent past that, well, for example, the United Nations considers adequate food a human right.
Mm-hmm.
We have the right to have adequate and a secure, safe food supply.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder if there aren't some points of view where, like a philosophy where, well, you want to eat, you got to work, and this sort of thing. And if you're not eating, then you must be doing something wrong, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that perhaps we've come to a different place now in our society where we don't think in those terms, especially with families. You've got young children. They definitely deserve and require, if we want them to thrive, they have to have an adequate food supply,
mm-hmm.
for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you see as positive developments or things that you'd like to see happen that would make things better? We do have things like the food bank here, mm-hmm. which are obviously a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just wondering if we could... you know, that's fine for here in Regina, mm-hmm. but there are other places that, I mean, if you don't live in Regina, what do you do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think in 2012, there was a cost of healthy eating report that was completed in Saskatchewan, and that paints a picture of what it costs across the province to eat healthy. Definitely the north sees increased costs for mm-hmm. a number of reasons. There's definitely a discrepancy between living on and off reserve
right.
and in remote communities. There's not the same selection. Mm-hmm. There's a number of small communities who've seen the loss of grocery stores. Mm-hmm. Now either convenience or hardware stores are selling some basic foods,
mm-hmm.
making people reliant on traveling to and from a city, sometimes mm-hmm. 2 hours away. So I think there's a lot of changing...
Now, I guess when you're in the north, if you've got a hunter for a friend or a member of the family, that sort of thing, if he brings down a moose or a deer mm-hmm. or something, then everybody
mm-hmm.
eats,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah, there was a lady in one of our community consultations that used to live on reserve, and she said it wasn't until they moved off reserve that they became food insecure, meaning mm-hmm. that they used mm-hmm. to have... you know, more the hunter, the gatherer
sure.
mm-hmm. type of lifestyle. And when they lived in their traditional way, they were able to sustain themselves further. And that's definitely a gap that came up mm-hmm. in the work that we've done so far is there's no written record of Indigenous food systems. There's mm-hmm. no current way of tracking community-based sharing systems.
Mm-hmm.
We know that people are still... hunting and still gathering and they're sharing mm-hmm. it, but we don't know how it's working, how frequent it is, how informal it is, but mm-hmm. that definitely makes a big difference.
I guess it's really a societal thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I say, if someone in a gathering, in a group, a community, if they're lucky enough to have a deer
yeah.
be taken down or a moose or something like that,
mm-hmm.
then generally speaking, it's shared.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
yeah. I heard like the prices of milk or just simple basic things is like triple or mm-hmm. quadrupled mm-hmm. on reserve.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Wow. Yeah, and if you don't have people with very many, you know, in the way of jobs, mm-hmm. is often the case mm-hmm. in the north, then mm-hmm. Definite problem.
Mm-hmm. Or you have to work away from your community
mm-hmm.
And travel back and forth.
And look, and also, I don't think people know that there's a difference between. You get the food you want, but you're also malnourished. Can you mm-hmm. kind of expand on that?
Well, I had mentioned that there should be enough food within Regina that people shouldn't be hungry. The quality of food
yeah.
definitely varies. So while we may not have malnourished people in the traditional sense of how we picture somebody being malnourished, people can still take in enough calories but still be malnourished, which is more mm-hmm. of the case of what we would have here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when you think about it, if you're doing the hunting and gathering up north, presuming that you have the skills that, mm-hmm. you know, taught by the elders and you've been paying attention,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. then you can feed yourself and your family probably fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you get into an urban setting, then all that goes out the window because mm-hmm. you can't get deer and moose down mm-hmm. here and whatever other things that you're going to find mm-hmm. To eat, you're just not going to have access to.
Yeah.
And you look on the shelves, and we have an awful lot of stuff on the shelves mm-hmm. that's just not healthy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely a lot easier to find unhealthy food options than mm-hmm. there is healthy options. And definitely one of the barriers to getting traditional food into urban centers and into retail market is the lack of processing facilities and how that doesn't necessarily jive with traditional practices. Right now, most processing facilities will accept if you want to do moose or mm. something like that, but you have to bring the animal live to the processing center. But if you were, you know, if you were going out to go hunting, mm-hmm. you're not lassoing a moose to bring it into the processing facility.
No.
So there, I know there is some work going on the, within the province to look at having a traditional processing facility available. You can do it. Sometimes small butchers will help, mm-hmm. but that's not ones that can go into the kind of the retail market. Mm-hmm. It would be just for home.
Yeah, I would imagine. Well, I know a lot of hunters have got a little facility of their own, maybe mm-hmm. in a shed in the backyard, mm-hmm. that sort of thing, where they can.
And I think one of the most important stories to tell about food security, at least in the Regina area, is our loss of processing capabilities. Regina used to have a flour mill. We used to have dairy. We used to have hog. All of that, all within, you know, mm-hmm. our mm-hmm. city limits, in essence. But now, most of that food, even if it's grown within 20 to 100 kilometers of downtown Regina, goes to Saskatoon, Manitoba, Alberta, or, mm-hmm. or further to be processed. Mm-hmm. And we have no good way of measuring or tracking what happens to our food. We can say what we process, but then what happens to it between processing and getting it back on our shelves. Chickpeas is a great example. Mm-hmm. Where Saskatchewan is a major producer of chickpeas. Most of the chickpeas on our shelves are from Saskatchewan, but where is it processed? Where does it go to? We don't have a way to tell. Mm-hmm. And that would be a really great indicator of food security to know how much local foods are consumed on Regina plates.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's a trend here now for people who can afford it, but then they come into agreements with farmers.
Mm-hmm.
And so the farmer can... He's got revenue mm-hmm. up front that he can mm-hmm. plan what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so mm-hmm. if you want a half a beef or something like mm-hmm. that, he can arrange for you to have a half a beef mm-hmm. at the end of the season sort of
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
And cut up and put in your freezer, that mm-hmm. type of thing. And the same thing with vegetables. And,
mm-hmm.
and then you know where your food is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
and it's the quality is there.
But yeah. the convenience, mm-hmm. though, mm-hmm. of doing that. And
yeah, well,
inconvenience.
There's, like,
you
yeah.
have to travel, transportation.
Yep.
Some will actually deliver to your door.
Oh, okay.
It's built into the cost. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or they have a distribution center. So Saturdays once a month, you can go to this place and pick it up. Or it's a bi-weekly distribution system. Community Sustained Agriculture, or CSAs, is kind of the buzzword of what mm-hmm. they're called. And they're starting to become quite popular. And they're... You know, there may be some price differences, but it's not an extreme difference. The costs are starting to balance out
mm-hmm.
And get closer to even. So
there are a lot of people who are more and more interested in getting their own piece of land
mm-hmm.
and doing sort of subsistence farming,
mm-hmm.
maybe keeping bees, things
mm-hmm.
like that,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they're... I guess you have to enjoy it. There's, mm-hmm. It's not for everybody.
No, it's not for everybody. But that is, growing your own food is definitely one of the most, mm-hmm. not necessarily the most important things, but one of the key things you can do to improve the local food system. For the most part, it's environmentally friendly. You learn to sustain yourself. It's part of the... Mm-hmm. food skills. You learn exactly where your food is coming from. You don't have to have 1 or 2 acres. You can grow a tomato plant and just have one on hand, or you can grow some herbs that you can keep all year round. But it's a good skill to know. Kids love playing in the dirt. It's an amazing family activity. Instead of sitting there watching TV or running them to and from activities,
mm-hmm.
kids will have fun with it. They could spend hours with the shovel and dirt. Your plant might not look very nice at the end of it, but you're bonding and you're having quality family time and you're learning something at the same time.
Yeah, and I think more and more people, too, they may not have a backyard, but there's some place that they can put pots or trays or something and actually grow some food, you know, like herbs, for example, or maybe some chives. Or bigger stuff, you know.
The Regina Public Library is actually having a series around container gardening, edible landscaping, and learning what to do with some foods such as dandelions and rose hips that you can find, you know, even within the park.
What is the best food to grow during winter? Because I know winter is probably the worst time to find food.
Yeah, you know, that's definitely one of the barriers of living in Saskatchewan, right? We have a short growing season and there's not a lot of greenhouses. So herbs are things that you can grow inside. We just tried an interesting thing with romaine lettuce. You take, you know, what's left with the root. You put it in a jar or glass of water by window, and we have some romaine, and we did that in early March.
Really?
So if you look online, there are some really interesting opportunities out there.
I don't know. I just really have this feeling that our own food supply is becoming more and more precarious because how much of our food is actually grown in Saskatchewan? You know, we're eating food that's grown in the United States, you know, or perhaps it comes from Mexico. There's quite a bit of this stuff. And as far as our meat is concerned, we've got these huge processing plants like the one in Brooks where they start to have some issues and all of a sudden your supply dries up, you know. So myself, I think I'd like to see, you know, the processing of food, what's the word I'm searching for here?
But,
you know, less less concentrated in a certain area.
Yeah, there's a sustainability piece to that for sure. And that definitely came out across our public consultations as people want access to healthy, local, sustainable food, regardless of income. Newcomers in particular are used to either growing their own food or walking to the market and knowing the people that grew the food. It was organic. So they're struggling with, you know, our food here because it's not what they're used to. It's not as fresh. And I think even for people who are on a low income or who struggle with food or have some sort of chronic disease with a lower immune system, they find wanting healthy food and the food safety piece of it is even more important to them because they're more susceptible if there are issues in processing plants.
Yeah, for sure. And the thing is, too, that when you're growing your own food, it's so much cheaper, you know. And if you get even more exotic and start to save seed, then you don't even have that cost anymore, you know.
Yeah.
And we do have groups in the province, in the city, who save seeds. And some of them are interesting seeds that you can't buy, you know. So it's the idea of having your own garden, I think, really appeals to me. If I had a little more, that's always the thing. If I had a little more time, if I had the opportunity. But you got to make the opportunity, I guess.
I wouldn't mind a tomato plant. I mean,
well, yeah.
I don't have a dog or a cat, so I think that's my first pet, I would say.
Well, and I think that you bring up a good point is a lot of times people think when they garden, they need to go big. But it could be just as simple as starting with a tomato plant in a pot.
One thing you have to watch out for, too, I was just thinking about the market gardens, not the gardens, but your farm markets, you know, like a Saturday market type of thing. You'll find the odd person will go and buy some bulk vegetables from someplace and then just go and sell it at the market. That happens. So you have to, so now you have to be paying attention. You know, are these guys farmers really?
Yeah, there are
or gardeners,
a variety of people, and that's always a struggle because there are some people who are doing it as a hobby and others who are doing it as a, you know, a career or their lifetime, and they need to make a living off of it as well.
Yeah. Well, we're about the halfway point here, so we're going to take a break, and we are going to come back with a little bit of music from Tracy Chapman, one of my favorites. And we've heard it before. You'll recognize it when we start it up. Is Tracy Chapman. I think the last time I played something by her, she was receiving some kind of an award with Harry Belafonte, human rights. She's a great human rights proponent. Mm-hmm. Yeah. On that note, I'm just going to talk about the winners. If you've been following our Look and Listen lottery at all here at CJTR, you'll know that we had our grand prize draw yesterday, And of course, the draw for the second and third prize. Our grand prize winner is Brendan Demian. And he wins the trip for two to New York City. So he's getting the return airfare for two, four-star hotel for 3 nights, baseball tickets, tickets for a motor coach tour of Manhattan and Radio City Music Hall, and $1,000 cash to spend any way you want. So congratulations to Brendan. And then my good friend Brenda Tachik won second prize.
Brenda?
This was the second prize winner is Brenda.
Okay.
First prize winner is Brendan.
Okay.
Okay, got it.
Just seeing a conspiracy there.
No. And so Brenda has won $1,000 travel voucher from Carlson Wagenli Rickert Travel. And my good friend Ken McCaw won the third prize.
Oh. Lots of friends of Jim's here.
Friends of Jim's, yeah. See, it pays to know me. Anyway, Ken wins a relaxing getaway at Moose Jaw's Temple Gardens Mineral Spa, which consists of a two-night stay, breakfast and dinner at Harwood's Dining Room, and a $100 gaming credit at Casinos Regina and Moose Jaw. So congratulations to Ken. And while I'm at it, I'll just mention that friends of the students of the Regina Mandolin Orchestra are going to be attending a little recital we're having tomorrow for the students. So we're going to do our thing tomorrow.
Cool.
It'll be exciting.
And you're part of it, right?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Time to shine.
Well, hopefully, yes. practice. Anyway, on to food security.
Mm-hmm.
And
we were having a very vigorous and exciting conversation about breastfeeding.
Oh, yes.
Before the show.
There you go.
It's a hot topic for everyone.
It is. And you know, really, when it comes right down to it, It's something that's come kind of back into fashion, but it's...
Breasts are back in fashion?
Well, you know, I mean the breastfeeding.
Okay.
You know, for years and years, I know that in my mother's time, breastfeeding generally wasn't done by the average woman. And even when I was in the business of raising children, you know, my wife didn't breastfeed either. And it was just sort of the societal norms of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And then people have finally started to realize the benefits of breastfeeding. And so I guess it's still not terribly common. What's your experience with breastfeeding?
We have really good, at least in Regina, really good initiation rates for women starting to breastfeed. So that shows that there's definite interest in people for trying.
Mm-hmm.
But then after 2 and 4 months, we seem to see that... decrease substantially.
Mm-hmm.
There has been some research that's looked into some of the reasons why, but lots of it boils down to parents wanting to do the best for their children, and then they make the decision that's going to be best for them. Ideally, there's some breast milk included in some way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
Best case scenario, people are exclusively breastfeeding, meaning they're not offering any other food or formula or water.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. It's you can see where there's a certain amount of sacrifice involved there because it's not as easy. It's not as convenient in some aspects.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in other aspects, like you were just talking about, okay, you're traveling.
Yeah.
You know, if you're traveling with a baby, if you're breastfeeding, no problem. If it's if it's feeding time.
Mm-hmm.
Then you just do it.
Mm-hmm. It's always the right temperature. You don't have to reheat. You don't have to worry about storage. You don't have to worry about sterilization of bottles. It's ready to go whenever baby is. And I think a lot of places have options for people who maybe don't feel comfortable breastfeeding in public, which is a great option.
Mm-hmm.
And other option that women use is they do express breast milk. So their child is still getting breast milk, but somebody else can feed. Women sometimes say that they feel tied down, or that's kind of one of the reasons. The reverse side of it is women often find that they do have more freedom because they're not worried about warming up the bottle. They're not sterilizing. They just...
Not to mention the cost of formula.
Mm-hmm.
If you look in mm-hmm. you know, grocery stores, drug stores, etc., and look at the cost of formula, mm-hmm. it's pretty steep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is based on old information, but what we used to do is if you breastfed for 1 month versus formula feeding, this is the amount of money you could save. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the year, it was a trip for four to Disneyland.
Wow.
So something to kind of consider. That mm-hmm. being said, there is a lot of push in marketing for breastfeeding paraphernalia. They push pumps. They mm-hmm. push this. They push that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it could end up costing a lot if you feel the need to buy all of these extra
mm-hmm.
pieces of equipment or...
Right, right. But mm-hmm. and then the other thing to consider, too, is that really there is nothing better
mm-hmm.
for the child
yeah.
than his
yeah.
own mother's milk, period.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of... benefits for breastfeeding and formula tries to mimic what's in breast milk and they just can't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it gives the child just the best possible start.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when we were looking at food security, breastfeeding definitely is the most food secure way of feeding an infant.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And it's regardless of the mother's nourishment, baby will always get what they need.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it's a real good idea for the mm-hmm. mother to feed herself properly so
mm-hmm. yeah.
yeah.
so she can keep things like calcium and mm-hmm. other stuff that she needs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, just to go back to the Regina Community Food Assessment,
mm-hmm.
is that an ongoing process or is it
yeah.
something that has happened or is going to happen?
We started about a year and a half ago, and there's kind of four main steps into it. The first one looked at an environmental scan where we kind of considered the research and looked at what's happening within the local context. Next step was public consultations where we went out to people and said, you know, what are the strengths of our food system? What are some of the challenges? What do you think we should do about it? What are our priorities? We looked at doing a gap analysis. You know, what information are we missing? What's not really there? And the final phase is an action plan. And we're just at that phase. So on June 11th, mm-hmm. There's an opportunity for the public to give us more feedback.
Mm-hmm.
We took what they said, what was in the environmental scan. We rolled it up, had some objectives, some proposed actions. And we're going to ask them to prioritize, make sure we got it right. And that will be June 11th at the Core Ritchie Neighborhood Center.
Mm-hmm.
There's one session from 10 to 11:30, and then another one in the evening from 5 to 7, mm-hmm. With a light supper from 5 to 5:30. So everybody's welcome to that.
Awesome. That's, and that twigs my memory here about something called the Good Food Box.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Could you explain what that's all
sure.
about?
Sure. REACH, Regina Education and Action on Child Hunger, offers something called the Good Food Box, and that's for everybody. It's a basket of food. You have the option between a small, medium, or large. You get things like potatoes, carrots, apples, tomatoes, mm-hmm. that type of stuff. It's delivered to a drop-off location bi-monthly.
Mm-hmm.
You pay 1 week, get it the next week. If you're interested, you can phone REACH. They will connect you with the local depot nearest you. And then there's also something called a family basket that REACH coordinates. So if you mm-hmm. are on assistance, you can arrange that through social services. It'll come automatically off your check. And
mm-hmm. so
you
what's
get an
the
extra
cost?
Bonus of milk. Or mm-hmm. The costs run anywhere from around $12, and then you can get into kind of $20 and $30, depending on how much food mm-hmm. you want.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So you get extra food?
If you do the family basket, yeah.
Okay.
You'll get some milk, hamburger, and eggs, typically.
Mm-hmm.
And And this is an initiative, you said REACH. What does that mm-hmm. stand for?
Regina Education and Action on Child Hunger.
Okay.
They're a food security organization within Regina.
Are they like associated with the health district or what's...
We do some partnerships, but they are a standalone organization. They're a partner in the community food assessment as well.
Well, what do you see would be an outcome, a positive outcome of what you're doing? What are you hoping to achieve when you know, when all is said and done here mm-hmm. with the food assessment?
Mm-hmm. I think one of the most important things is we can start to connect people. Mm-hmm. One of the things that came out of the public consultations that we've known is word of mouth is the best form of advertising. And there's by agencies and people communicating with one another and letting people know what they're doing, it's easier to get it out to the public. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one benefit. The other benefit is we can have a plan that people can sign on to and work towards together. One thing we recognize in this food assessment is there's a lot of really good work, but if we want to make big change, we need to work together.
Mm-hmm.
Is any type of political policy going to be put into this mm-hmm. project?
Yeah, there is definitely some discussion of policy that has come up through, you know, within our environmental scan and within mm-hmm. our within our public consultations, and there's an opportunity on June 11th to comment on which one, what you might think mm-hmm. would be the most important for a strategy. Mm-hmm. But Health Canada is doing two, I think, really important things right now. One is they've reopened the labeling consultation, so that's available for the public to provide feedback on. They have an online survey that talks about, you know, when you're looking at your food and your nutrition label, what do you want to see on it?
Mm-hmm.
So some of the things that people don't have right now is you can't tell how much added sugar is in it, and you can't compare that to kind of the natural sugar.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know where the food is coming from. You know, made in Canada, what does that mean? It doesn't necessarily mm-hmm. mean processed in Canada. GMOs has mm-hmm. been something. Salt has been another another piece. So, and consistency between portion sizes from one food to another, because there's no consistency now.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing Health Canada is doing in Environment Canada is they're reviewing some pesticides that are being used that are banned in Europe to determine the safety and whether it should be banned in Canada as mm-hmm. well. So I think that's mm-hmm. an interesting conversation to follow, and that's all up on their website.
Yeah, I was mm-hmm. listening to an interesting program on CBC this morning. They're talking about glyphosate, you know, herbicides,
mm-hmm.
and how the manufacturer is claiming that they're absolutely safe, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But people who are living close to fields that are being treated with the, with this are getting ill, and this is anecdotal. But if you go into Europe, they're much more stringently controlled, if not banned. You know, the glyphosate type herbicides like Roundup.
Mm-hmm.
So there seems to be a little bit of a gap there between what's accepted, you know, and you always kind of question research that's been funded by the guy that mm-hmm. produced the stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that often is the case.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll tell you how wonderful their research is, but they're selling it,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just hoping that our own Health Canada people have the resources to have a closer look at some of these things, you know, so that we know what's safe
mm-hmm.
And what isn't. I was just going to mention, too, when you talk about labeling, that in the recent past, the food processing companies have managed to make a bit of a boogeyman out of fat and sugar, fat and salt,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then they're going to solve your problem because they'll sell you this wonderful food that's reduced fat and reduced mm-hmm. salt. And they don't say much about the sugar,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
lots of times this so-called healthy stuff that they're trying to sell you has way more sugar in it than you need.
Mm-hmm.
And in my own opinion, from what I've read and my own experience, is that sugar is what we should be watching.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think the average person today is probably ingesting far more sugar than is good for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've definitely paid a lot more attention to fat and salt, which are important, but we
mm-hmm.
tend to ignore, you know, the sugar. And the health claims that, or in the advertising that are on the foods can trick you. You always mm-hmm. have to read the label and see mm-hmm. where the ingredient is. An example of that is some of the fruit gummies. They say 100% pure juice. So, you know, vitamin C, your daily dose, blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But when you actually compare it to you know, sour gummies or some actual candy, they actually have more sugar in it than the candy does. And our body treats the sugar the same way, regardless of whether it's natural or not. Another example is Oreo cookies. In order to say low in fat, it needs to be, or not necessarily Oreo cookies, but just some brands that have a regular and a low in fat version. If you compare the low in fat to the regular ones, and you actually compare it, they've just decreased the serving size. So you have one cookie compared to three, and not a lot of people are eating one cookie at a time, right? So you have to rely on doing a lot of math, and you know,
it's frustrating.
You got to watch out for these marketers.
Shopping's a full-time job.
You got to bring your calculator and a pad and just...
A few easy things to keep in mind is if you can't pronounce the ingredients on the food, if it's got a cartoon, if it's got some sort of a health claim, generally those are foods you don't want to get. Look at whole foods, vegetables, fruits. Shop around the outside of the grocery store. Those are where typically the healthiest foods are.
In the course of this discussion about food security, was any consideration given to emergency situations, like severe weather or some sort of calamity, anything talked about there, like in terms of what kind of food supply you should have at home?
No, this wasn't something that this project looked at all.
I see. You know, when you think about the whole thing, probably the best thing a person can do to sort of improve his food security is to go out and plant his own garden.
Know?
And investigate. You were talking about canning, and there used to be a lot of people. Well, it's not a dead art. You know, there are still people out there who are canning vegetables, and they're canning meat. And Health Canada has provided some guidelines to make sure that that's safe. I know people used to just do canned tomatoes in a in just a water bath, and I think you can get away with that if the tomatoes are sufficiently acidic.
Health Canada has provided some good guidelines specifically around tomatoes that if you are just kind of stewing tomatoes, I think there needs to be a lemon or a vinegar added to
increase the acidity.
And then as soon as you start making like a spaghetti sauce where you're adding meat or other vegetables to it, there's a different, gets it into a different category, and their website
they want a pressure cooker, I think.
Yeah.
Which probably makes sense. But it's worthwhile from the point of view of how much food you have stored. I started talking about emergency foods, and it reminds me of my in-laws. And, you know, they came through the Depression, that sort of thing. And I think that must have affected the way they looked at food, because they had, I think, three freezers out on the farm, and there was always a deer hanging in the basement, whether it was in season or not, and vegetables were canned, fruit was canned. They really didn't have much need to go to the store, you know, and I think they took it to a little bit of an extreme, but I think it just shows that it's possible, you know, to become...
And that's why people shop at Costco. They want to buy in bulk. It's cheaper to buy in bulk, isn't it? Or no?
Oh, sometimes it is.
Sometimes,
And you have to watch what you're doing there. But yeah, you can frequently get good deals on food there, for sure. But then you have to know what to do with it. You know, are you going to freeze it? Are you going to can it?
And you have to have some means to store it once you get home, and you have to have some means to be able to get it home. If you're using public transportation, Or you rely on walking or biking, bulk shopping really isn't an option.
Yeah, and you're living in a one-bedroom apartment. It's a little rough. Yeah, the situations and circumstances are all over the map, that's for sure. So let's just go over one more time. You're going to have one more meeting, a public meeting?
Yes, on June 11th at the Core Ritchie Neighborhood Center. The two times are at 10 to 11:30 or 5 to 7:30. or 5 to 7, sorry. You can find more information at foodregina.ca or at our Facebook page or on our Twitter account at ReginaCFA.
So your Facebook page or your you've got a web page as well?
Yes.
So they will explain what has been done already?
Yes.
And so you can get information there and, and sort of get yourself up to speed on the discussion and find out what what they want to discuss at at this next meeting.
And there's a light supper there as well. Yeah. So
okay.
Come hungry.
Do we have a menu?
No. Not yet. I wish.
Right. So if you're interested in the whole idea of food security, now is this more food security for the community or is it more individual?
We have some information about both, but our project is really looking at community food security and the sustainable food system model.
Okay. And basically what was the impetus to get this going?
Yeah. There were a few folks talking about doing this. It's been done across Canada. It isn't it isn't a new process. And there's been some really good tangible outcomes in other communities across Canada. In fact, most other communities have completed a food assessment. But in Regina, we don't have a food coalition or a food policy council or anything like that that had already been operating. We were missing some gaps in our information already. So this is a good opportunity to start to get people talking and connected and having a reason to come together.
Did some of those other communities have web pages or anything that that you could look at just to see what they've done?
Get an idea. Waterloo Roundtable has a good site. Almost all communities in BC have done it. Edmonton, Calgary, Winnipeg, LaRonge, Saskatoon, for kind of the western provinces.
Are they kind of integrating it with the sort of housing first initiative type of thing?
There's a couple of different ways that they've integrated themselves. For example, Calgary and Edmonton are more integrated right in with municipal government. So it's kind of like a committee of the government, whereas in Waterloo they're more of a grassroots organization with strong university, health region, community partnerships, and I would say we're a little bit more situated similar to Waterloo in that regards.
Is this a study that needs to be done every year annually?
No. Okay. I think there's definitely new information that comes up annually, and I think it's always good to keep in check as to whether we're staying connected to what the community wants. But some of the action items take definitely more than 1 year.
Well, we'd like to thank you very much, Tracy, for being here and talking about food. I think it's a worthwhile discussion, and an awful lot more needs to be done in terms of food security and hopefully we can have that process happen and make some improvements.
Great. Thanks a lot.
As we close this week's Human Rights Radio and CJTR Community Radio, we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. For information on past and upcoming shows with links to human rights actions and information, go to amnestysaskatchewan.ca. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."